Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
As Angela said, today I'm going to talk about imagination, which is one of my favorite spiritual subjects. And if anyone here doesn't think that imagination is a very, very spiritual topic, then you haven't been coming here very long. Because imagination is one of the most powerful ways that we can use our thoughts and our emotions, which are the tools that we use to create our life. In fact, Albert Einstein, one of my favorite scientists and philosophers, and one of the greatest scientists who ever lived, once made the very interesting observation that imagination is more important than knowledge. It's a great quote. And he said that because knowledge is basically just a collection of things that we have learned or a collection of beliefs about what we know is possible at our present level of understanding. But imagination adds an important ingredient to that, all right? It allows us to go far beyond what we have learned to a place in consciousness where we can begin to create completely new possibilities in our mind, new processes, new products, new solutions, new results that don't yet exist in the real world. That's key. But it's the ability we all have to see things that have not yet appeared, to find solutions we don't yet know how to do, that is the first step in creating all these new things that we create. In other words, metaphysically speaking, you could say that our imagination can actually be a preview of coming attractions. In fact, that's what it should be. That's what we're going to talk about today. But before I get into the heart of this, there's something important that I'd like to point out. Even though imagination is a word that we throw around a lot, we haven't even decided yet what it's supposed to mean. We aren't even sure if it's good or bad. We don't even know if it's a liability or an asset. We call imagination by a lot of different names, like creativity or vision or fantasy or hallucination or future thinking. We call it all those things. If somebody seems to be in a rut, we tell them to use their imagination because their thinking is too rigid. Then 5 minutes later, when they get out of that rut, we describe their bold new idea about what they might accomplish as just their imagination. You know, meaning it'll probably never work. Or if somebody is paranoid, we say they are victims of their own imagination. Then we talk about somebody else as a visionary because they are a person of great imagination. We use it all different ways. In school, if a child has invisible playmates, we say that they have what? An overactive imagination. So we put them in an art class and we tell them to use their imagination to draw something that they can't see. All right? That's why it's all very confusing. The truth is, as with any mental and spiritual process, any of the ones we talk about here, the value comes in knowing when and how to use whatever spiritual tool we're talking about. In this case, imagination. And I say that because even though sometimes it can help us, other times imagination can get in our way. For example, if we tend to live in our imagination a lot, which a lot of people do, whether you realize it or not, because they don't like what they see in the real world, if we do that, we run a risk. We run the risk of becoming a dreamer, which is not a bad thing, but a dreamer is a person who talks about great possibilities, but never does anything to make them happen. On the other hand, there's extremes to this. If we allow our imagination to be stifled by the negative voices of the people around us and the news and all these other things, eventually our imagination will start to shut down. It'll wither away to nothing. We'll stop being able to visualize in our mind anything that doesn't already exist in what is popularly known as the real world. Now, this happens to a lot of people, which is why real, over-the-top, creative imagination is in such short supply. And when you get imaginative people like Steve Jobs, for example, they become so famous because they're unique. I mean, think about it. Most of the time, in the average world, all right, if we bring up a new, fantastic, highly creative idea to a group of so-called normal people, anybody know any normal people here all right? At the office, maybe at a party, whatever it is, a sizable majority of the people who are there will criticize 90% of our idea because of the 10% they think is impossible. That's what they do. What they don't see, because it's part of what most of the normal world, so-called normal world, fails to see more often than not, is that the word impossible simply means something that so far has not been done. That's all it means. We have to realize that words like possible and impossible are not absolute scientific definitions. They're simply beliefs based on our present knowledge. And though they may be true based on what we know today, they may not be true tomorrow. They may not be true tomorrow. Not because the laws of the universe change overnight, but because someone with imagination will always figure out a way to take the same old physical or spiritual laws that have already existed and use them in a completely different way. A completely different way. Now, imagination is not purely an intellectual exercise either, though it does require the ability to think and to explore ideas, which are intellectual qualities. But those are just a small part of it. What it really demands is the ability to dream and to play and to suspend all judgment and to let our thoughts soar, like the song Patrick just sang. I love that. But there's something else that I've noticed. The most obvious time we start to imagine something better, either in our life or in the world, is when our heart's desires are not being met by what is in our life. Okay, this is something I've heard the term used, divine discontent. Isn't that a great phrase? Divine discontent. You see, our heart knows the difference between what we can do and what we love to do. Our heart knows the difference, even if we don't, or even if we try not to think about it because we know it's going to shake things up. So our heart uses the power of imagination to hold our dream, to hold our deepest desire right here in front of our face. So we can't ignore it. Doesn't matter where you turn, there it is right in front of you. In other words, there's something inside of us that'll never be completely satisfied with the way things are, especially if the life we're living is a lot less fulfilling than we could be living. And our heart knows this. So it uses our imagination to stretch our mind. To stretch our mind. Now, there's a New Thought writer by the name of Alan Cohen, wrote a book called The Dragon Doesn't Live Here Anymore and a few others. Excellent books, highly recommend it. And he said this, I love it. He says, imagination is the God-given faculty we can use to breathe life into whatever our heart desires. Isn't that great? Let me read that again. Imagination is the God-given faculty we can use to breathe life into whatever our heart desires. Even if we have somehow managed to convince ourselves that what we have now is all we're going to have ever or all we ever deserve, whenever we see the possibility of something better in the world around us, when something kind of touches and stimulates our imagination, that touches something in here. And once it does, and we start to imagine that thing happening, it gets very difficult to go back to our old way of thinking. That's why things like CNN, Ted Turner, great visionary, satellite television, the internet, all those other things have all had such a profound effect on people in the developing world. Whether or not you like what's being broadcast, and there's a lot of garbage on there, but there's some good stuff. These things showed a whole new range of possibilities to people who never before knew what their world and their life could look like. And that did something. It inspired them. It fired their imagination. And not only did they see it, they felt it. They felt it. That's what all this movement around the world is today. And that's important for us to recognize because we can't just know something better to create something better. We have to be able to feel it. We have to be able to feel it. We have to be able to see ourselves completely immersed in a new life or a new world if we want that thing to happen. Now, Angela had a personal story. Let me tell you a personal story. People say I never tell personal stories. Well, here's one for this year, okay? And it's about the power of imagination. I remember I was 12 years old, okay? So this is what, 20, 25 years ago? 55, somewhere in there. My family didn't have a whole lot of money. We had a lot of kids, but no money, okay? So I figured I'd probably be going eventually to the local junior college and then on to a state high school, like all my high school or my junior high school friends at the age of 12. Obviously, I wasn't thinking much beyond that. And then one night, I remember, I was watching television, black and white at the time, okay? I was drinking cold chocolate milk, a big glass, and eating two peanut butter and honey sandwiches, which I did virtually every night in front of the television. And there was a news special on. And it was a news special about the military academies in the United States. I think it was specifically about West Point. And for some reason, that just triggered me. It was something I had never really thought about. So I went and asked my dad about it, and he said, oh, I don't know much about it, whatever. And so he said, why don't you talk to your guidance counselor, seventh grade. Next day I went in, and the guy goes, I don't know anything. Let me look through. He thumbs through, and he finds this trifold brochure for the United States Air Force Academy. And it had the blue sky and the chapel with all the points and the mountains in the back and these guys standing there and all that. And I was absolutely blown away. So I said, can I have that? He said, sure. I took it home, and I put it on my wall in the bedroom, okay? Not only that, I copied the address and sent away and got their catalog, and I almost memorized it. I found every book in the library about the Air Force Academy, and I read them all. But I did something else. Besides just collecting information, though I didn't do this deliberately, this is what I did. I imagined myself being there. I dreamt about it. I daydreamt about it. I saw myself in uniform sitting in the classrooms, you know, walking around the campus, marching in the parades. I was a weird kid. What can I say? Okay. I knew what the dorm rooms looked like. I knew what my academic major was going to be because I had looked at the catalog. I could even see myself graduating and throwing my hat up in the air like you see on all these pictures. I never once thought about not going there. And 6 years later, guess what happened? I went. Okay. Now, was this just sort of a, you know, a child focusing on something and doing it or a coincidence? It could be, but I don't think so. And I say that because in the years since, especially in this teaching here and over at the Woodruff, I have seen similar and greater things happen far too often for a lot of people for it not to be something a whole lot more powerful than just coincidence. I remember my wife and I going to New York 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and we went over to the Guggenheim Museum. And as we were coming out in the gift shop, there was a huge case, and it was filled with nothing but the jewelry and the biography of one of my students who had come up with the idea of that jewelry during one of our classes. Might have been that same class, I don't know, in that creating wealth thing. That was amazing. Next day, we went over to the Metropolitan Art Museum. We're walking, we come around a corner, and there's a huge 12-foot by 15-foot display of one of our former students, for Vera designed something that she had designed. It was incredible, and there it was. So just in 2 days, we had walked around and seen that, and these ideas came out of nothing, okay? Nothing but a dream and the desire to make it come true. You see, we're talking here about a generating power that comes into play at the very beginning of the creative process. We're talking about the most powerful force for change there has ever been, stronger than any army, political movement, or anything else. We're talking about being able to completely replace, this is important, get this, to completely replace not only our own beliefs about something, but maybe using our mind to change the beliefs of the entire human race up until now. It's happened over and over again. And to replace those beliefs consciously and deliberately, all right, with a brand new set of invisible and intangible assumptions that are completely capable of achieving their own fulfillment. The answer is always in the question. So we're talking here about passionate visions becoming reality. We're talking about being able to create anything out of nothing, regardless of facts, regardless of history, regardless of the evidence at hand, which is really pretty cool, don't you think? I certainly do. But, there's always a but. Needless to say, this takes a slightly different way of thinking than most people are used to. You see, as rational beings, we get very attached to facts. How many scientists do we have in this room? Okay. A number. Yeah, I see you, Chloe. Anyway, hiding back there. Okay. Not that we don't believe facts can change, because we know that we can as we learn more. We just think the concrete limitations like time and money and space and age and education and opportunity have to be dealt with in a logical and reasonable manner. But using our imagination doesn't take the place of logic or reason. It just allows us to expand our idea of what logic and reason really are. That's all it does. That's how we use our imagination to create a solution instead of just handling a problem. That's how we use it. I mean, let me take a silly little example, one more. It actually happened to someone I know. Let's say we wanted to go to Paris for a month to attend a prestigious cooking school. A woman I knew years ago wanted to do that. However, our logical mind says we have no vacation time, no money, and we don't speak a word of French. And we can't cook. That was in there too, okay? Is it still possible, or should we just forget about it because all the facts say that we can't do it? All right, that's a situation. But here's the question I want you to consider, and it's got two parts to it, so stick with me. By releasing any need to handle all these challenges and simply imagining ourselves there in the school, having a wonderful time, living in a lovely apartment on the west bank, on the left bank, spending our evenings with a charming citizen of the French Republic, will this be enough to bring our experience into our life in spite of all the facts? And, this is the second part of the question, if our vision does become a reality, will we be able to look back on how it all came about and honestly say, well, of course it happened that way. Everything that happened to make this happen all made perfect sense. I don't know why I was making such a big deal about it. Well, that's what happened to my friend. She had no idea beforehand how she was going to do it, but she made it happen. That's the shift in thinking we need to learn how to make. In other words, in order to learn how to create the life I want, do I have to worry about the facts and the details and the problems that I'm facing? Or can I purely focus and rely on the power of my imagination? Can I focus all of my mental, emotional, and spiritual energy on feeling my desire fulfilled, and then allow the infinite mind of the universe to handle all the details? Which is something it does quite well, I have found in the past. Now, this is an important question because it really gets to the core of how we in this teaching believe that life works. Whether we realize it or not, we all have faith in something. Faith is kind of a loaded word, but we all have faith in something. But the question is, do we have faith in an automatic spiritual process that works without being distracted by the way that things appear to be? Or do we have faith in a world that constantly puts limitations on us that we are powerless to overcome? What do you want to have faith in? I don't know about you. For me, the choice is obvious. You see, a simple look at history shows us that the accepted limitations of the world have always been illusions. In retrospect, always, always, always. Or as I once heard it said, conventional wisdom may definitely be conventional, but it's not usually very wise. Okay? Every invention, every discovery, every creation that exists now in human civilization started with an idea and nothing else. And nothing else. But that idea started out the only place that an idea can start out, which is where? In someone's imagination. It had to. Because not only did that thing, whatever it was, not yet exist, the knowledge of how to create it wasn't even known yet. It was all possible, but nobody knew it. But some person of faith and vision and, yes, imagination was able to see the completed creation in their mind, all right? And that person, whoever they were, didn't believe it just with their mind. They believed it with their entire beings. They saw it. They felt it. They could touch it. They could taste it. That's why even if the first attempt failed, they kept on going until their dream came true. Now, sometimes we misuse our imagination. We use it to push us deeper into our limitations. A lot of us do that. Instead of looking upward, I think I read the phrase in the meditation this morning, to the hills from whence our help cometh. I love that phrase. Instead of looking there, we use our vision to look ahead and see all the potential dangers and pitfalls. Anybody ever do that? I have. Okay. And to see the worst that might happen instead of the best. We imagine problems that don't yet exist. We prepare for disasters that usually never happen. And when we do this, the law of mind that we're talking about works the same way as it does when we use our imagination in the right way. It brings to us more of what we expect, because that's what it does. However, in this case, it brings us more problems, more challenges, and more difficult people. It brings into our experience whatever disaster we've been energizing with our dominant emotion, which is usually fear. And then when it doesn't work out the way we think it should, even though it was our own beliefs that got in the way, we shrug our shoulders and say, "See, I knew it wasn't going to work. I knew all the time it wasn't going to work. It was too good to be true." Then we go on our way adding one more item to our long list of things that we think God doesn't want us to have. And meanwhile, somebody else is making our dream come true for them. For them. Happens all the time. So let's talk for just a minute about how this awareness of imagination should affect the way we think. All right. For one thing, it means we should base our aim in life not on what we think we can achieve, but on what we would passionately love to achieve. You see the difference? It's a big difference. And maybe even a little beyond that. Even a little beyond what we love to achieve. The poet Khalil Gibran wrote this once. I love his writing. He says, "To understand the heart and mind of a person, look not at what he has already achieved, but at what he aspires to." So what do you aspire to? That's the question. If we combine our aspiration with our imagination, we will be amazed at the manifestation. We will. Ooh, I like that. Didn't that sound good anyway? There are a lot of people in this world who would consider their life a success if they could accomplish just a few of the things they wanted to do before they die. A lot of people will tell you that. But how much better would our life be if we could accomplish all the things we could imagine ourselves doing before we die? That's a nice thought. But to do so, we have to be able to get excited and become inspired. We have to believe not just in our possibility and probability, but in the inevitability. That's what we have to remember. That's what sets the mental and spiritual energy of the universe in motion to turn the dream into an experience. But staying interested and inspired all the time takes a lot of conscious attention. That's what we have to remember. The late, great Wayne Dyer, in his book, 10 Secrets for Success and Inner Peace, said, "We need to have a mind that is open to everything and attached to nothing." That's very Taoist, if you follow Taoism, and even a little bit Buddhist. We need to have a mind that is open to everything and attached to nothing. But that's not as easy as it sounds, because from childhood, we have been trained to think and act a certain way based on our own particular family or culture or religion or whatever. We have all been trained. You have been trained, I have been trained, to see a certain spectrum of possibilities. Nothing outside of it, just there. And we have all become unconsciously attached to certain ways of doing things. So as a result, it takes conscious and deliberate effort to learn to see things that are beyond our narrow spectrum of beliefs, because our imagination has become limited in ways that we don't even realize. Now, the good news is we can expand that range, that spectrum. We can expand it through practice, because imagination is like a muscle. The more we exercise it, the stronger it gets. But in the process of doing this, there are some things we need to do, and there are some things we need to stop doing. So things we need to do to expand our imagination: we need to talk less and listen more. There's a start. We need to seek out new ideas and new experiences or new environments, like Angela did with her car, and try them on for size. Take a test drive. See if you like it, okay? We need to examine our beliefs, especially our most strongly held beliefs, and loosen them up a little every day. We need to question all those unwritten rules that we have been following for so many years. We need to start asking ourselves questions like, why do I believe such and such? Why are things that certain way in my life? What if everything was different? What if everything I've been doing was different? And we need to listen to the answers that come from us, yes, from the people we trust, but especially from within. Especially from within. On the other hand, some things we need to stop doing we need to stop thinking about what we think we know and start thinking about what we don't know. Very important. We need to stop thinking that our way is the right way or the only way. And finally, we need to stop being so afraid of change and to start getting excited about it. Michelangelo had a great statement. He said many years ago, this is probably 500 years ago, he said, the danger is not that our dreams are too big and that we might fail to reach them. He said, the real danger is that our aim is too low and we might reach it and stop there. Isn't that profound? Very, very beautiful. So to keep our imagination active, to draw the very best out of us that we're able to give, we need to set the bar higher. We need to set the bar higher because once we do, we create a bigger space for new things to happen. We stop thinking of ourselves as our job or our story or our age or our race or our gender or any of those other things because we realize that our future no longer depends on those things. It only depends on what we can imagine. We begin to see ourselves, if we do this, as we should, as pure creative potential limited only by our vision of what we can and can't do. And once we realize that our beliefs create the only limit to what we can accomplish, we can start to give more attention to what we'd like to do and a lot less attention to what the world tells us we can do. We can start to live our dreams. There was a friend of mine, a minister out in California, came up with years ago. He said, our dreams are waiting for us to come true. Our dreams are waiting for us to come true. And when we finally reach that point, when the world around us finally begins to reflect our dreams instead of dictating them, then we'll be ready to imagine a life and a world without conflict, hate, limitation, poverty, loneliness, disease, all those other things that we've believed in for so long as a normal part of the human experience. Once we are able to imagine that kind of a life and that kind of world, it will be ours. We will have created it. Because that's how powerful we are. This is the truth in your life. And this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. All right. Thanks. Okay. Let's take a few moments. A lot of ideas, a lot of thoughts. Take the ones that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others. And let's know this. I recognize that there is an infinite intelligence, a power, a life force that is expressing in the world as the world. This power that I call God or spirit or life or the universal life force expresses in the world as me. But not just the physical me with my name, my birth date, my end date. Not just that. It expresses itself as thought, as intelligence, combined together to create new and greater things over and over, higher and higher, greater and greater. So as I see this in science and technology and medicine and all these other scientific fields, I recognize that the same laws hold true in my life. I have the ability, as a divine spiritual being, to take a thought, to expand that thought beyond what the physical world shows, and to make it real. And as each one of us do this, and we piggyback on each other's ideas, and we start to gain from each other's imagination, rather from lose from each other's limitation, we begin to create a world that works even better for everyone, everywhere. A world where all the possibilities of life are not just imagined, they are created and expressed. A world where all the greater possibilities for living are enjoyed by everyone who lives. Knowing this, I give no more power to the negativity, to the limitation, to the anger or the fear that has caught up so much of the world in its grip. I recognize that there is something better than war, and that is peace. I recognize there is something better than lack and poverty and limitation, and that is prosperity. I recognize there is something far greater than disease, and that is the belief in health and healing. And I recognize that there is something far more powerful than loneliness and apathy, and that is love. So I focus my mind on these greater ideas, knowing that however strongly I focus, there's something even greater beyond what I can think and what I can see and what I can believe. So as I open myself to these ideas, they expand in my consciousness and express themselves in the world. This is my truth. I accept it and I release it into consciousness, letting it be so for me and every other person from this moment on. Join me in saying, and so it is.